A pleasant Wednesday afternoon. This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. I'm Kyle Kellums at 6 minutes after 12. Ahead on today's show, the spectacle of Les Mis is back on stage at Walton Arts Center, and we'll talk with cast member Mary Kate Moore about the show and the chance to sing a showstopper in the first act. Our visit later on today's Ozarks. Then, after Ozark, stay tuned to 91.3 for Here and Now from NPR and WBUR. 1 in 5 high school students in America now uses e-cigarettes. Many of them are disciplined because the use of products are against school rules. But one high school principal in Connecticut wants to treat vaping as an addiction and offer kids education rather than just punishment. A conversation with him, plus the afternoon's news on Here and Now, beginning at 1. Tonight, Artisphere again offers a trip to the moon. 1-year lease theater company's production, The Moon Project, promises a deep exploration into the private motivations of astronauts and will use sounds of the time, from science to social causes, to create the atmosphere. The script merges pieces of sourced historical text, including political speeches, sermons, conversations, letters, phone calls, the lunar landing radio transcript, and song lyrics from the time. Presentation is at 21C Museum Hotel from 7 to 8:30 tonight. Tickets free, but reservations required. More at waltonartscenter.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Hemp farms are sprouting up across the natural state for the first time since a 1930s era prohibition. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, hemp growers remain tightly regulated as licensed research sites under changing state and federal laws. She takes us to a new hemp farm northwest of Fayetteville to further explain.
A half a dozen farm techs move foot-tall potted hemp plant starts from trays into a hoop house on an 11-acre hemp farm in rural northwest Washington County, operated by Arkansas Hemp Genetics, LLC. Jody Harden, co-founder and CEO, says 5 acres are presently under cultivation.
And they're about knee-high. Some of them are mid-thigh already. And they're just taking root.
Harden last winter leased a climate-controlled warehouse to sprout 10,000 hemp starts from seed, which were transported here in late May for transplanting. A state-of-the-art irrigation system has been installed on the farm to keep the hemp crop hydrated this summer. Harden is conducting hemp-growing research trials here, he says.
What we have is 3 different types of growing systems. We're growing in 30-gallon air pots with time drip emitters. Then we're growing an open field, and we're gonna grow under shade cover.
Rick Funderburg is the farm's chief operating officer.
We have 6 cultivars out here. The Berry Blossom, Cherry Blossom, Cherry Trump, Trump One, Trophy Wife, and Marlowe are the 6 cultivars.
All of them medicinal cultivars growing on this research facility licensed by the state. Jody Harden says, they may or may not thrive on the Ozarks.
These particular cultivars have been grown in Oregon and Colorado, and so it's the plant will adapt over several generations, but this is the first year in Arkansas, so we don't have, the plant hasn't had time to adjust to the new microclimate that we have here in our farm.
The botanical name for hemp is ruderalis, a flowering leafy species of cannabis. Since prehistoric times, ruderalis was used to make cloth and rope, and later to manufacture paper. In the 1930s, hemp was outlawed, however, in the U.S., along with its intoxicating cousins, cannabis sativa and cannabis indica. Cannabis ruderalis contains only trace amounts of THC, the stuff that gets you high, compared to recreational cultivated marijuana, now legal in a half dozen states, which can contain as much as 15% THC. Both hemp and marijuana produce chemical compounds called cannabinoids, which research suggests may act on the human endocannabinoid system to reduce anxiety, pain, nausea, and kill cancer cells. This hemp farm is among 108 in Arkansas licensed this year.
I'm number six. Because of our proximity to the university, we've already working with the U of A plant pathology, Dr. Jim Carroll, who's been out here numerous times with his team taking samples back to their lab. And we've got an internship program we initiated with the U of A to do some work training to teach young farmers at the university.
Arkansas Hemp Genetics counts two local primary investors, retired banker Hayden McElroy and faithful ophthalmologist Dr. Jay McDonald. The company plans to produce a brand name line of cannabis products for commercial sale down the road.
And we're trying different trials in the field here to show which ones yield the most, yield the best. And these plants need a lot of air. They're going to look like Christmas trees. And they will be about 8 or 10 feet tall, and it'll be beautiful out here.
Harden walks to test field number two following a $70,000 chain link security fence built to deter both thieves and wildlife.
All six different strains, we've kind of spread it out around the farm. We're growing the same six up here and the same six back here, and we're doing them side-by-side trials so you can visually see the difference in the cultivars. And we're varying the degree of fertility in each bed. And we're seeing if the natural soil grows better without anything in it.
Come fall, Harden says, the flowers from his hemp crop will be dried and processed in an industrial warehouse in South Fayetteville.
Well, we strip it from the stalk and we put it in large tote bags stored until it can get to the extractor.
A crew of 15 farmhands who constitute an emerging cannabis agricultural workforce labor here, led by field manager Caleb Cole.
I love it. I came from Northern California working with medicinal cannabis, and so I was excited that my home state of Arkansas has, you know, had this going on.
Natalie Leonard is also a commercially trained California cannabis grower.
I worked out in California for about 3 years doing exclusively commercial grow cannabis and working in dispensaries, distribution, making edibles, that kind of stuff.
And Heather Arway says she's learning the ropes of growing cannabis.
I'm from here. I've done a little bit of farm work on the West Coast, but those were like orchards and like self-sustainable farms. This is my first time ever working with cannabis. I'm just here because I'm excited that Arkansas finally has a cannabis crop. And I also am just like interested in agriculture in general.
Jody Harden says hiring young people is part of his company's broad educational mission.
We're sort of taking the lead to help train farmers. We've done a couple of hemp clinics. We're doing a newsletter. We're doing two field days this summer so that all the farmers in states around us can come and see these unique genetics that we've acquired.
According to Caleb Allen, Arkansas Department of Agriculture Independent Hemp Program Coordinator, more than 3,200 acres of hemp is in production across 42 Arkansas counties.
As of right now, we're still conducting our program out of the 2014 Farm Bill, which gives departments the ability to license program participants to conduct research.
To develop best management practices for hemp cultivation in Arkansas, Allen says, which must exceed more than a quarter of an acre. But before any hemp is processed for commercial sale, the state will test hemp harvests to ensure THC levels are below 0.3%. If not, the crop is destroyed. Until USDA issues new rules on hemp farming, individual gardeners and growers for now are barred by the state and federal government from growing hemp for personal use. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF is raising money all this month to finish our financial year strong so we can bring you the best local and national programming on your radio. From Morning Edition to Ozarks at Large, you rely on 91.3 for the best in news, music, and more. And this June, we're offering a chance to celebrate one of our local programs, the Generic Blues Show with Paul Kelso. As a thank you for a gift of $50 or more, you can go to KUAF's Summer Night Swing, a live concert celebrating the Generic Blues Show. That's June 28th, a week from Friday, at the Fayetteville Public Library. Support your public radio station and celebrate with live local blues. Tickets are limited, so give online at supportkuaf.com and request your tickets. After more than a decade as president and CEO of the Endeavor Foundation, Anita Sism is retiring from that role. A press release issued this morning indicates the formal announcement is the culmination of a multi-year succession plan. She will remain as special counsel to the chair through the end of September. The appointment of Jeff Webster, a former board member of the foundation, as the new president and CEO is part of the succession plan. Anita Sism became the president and CEO of Endeavor in 2008, and during her tenure, the foundation invested $75 million in projects connected to health, childhood development, and human services in the region. A discussion about further investment in downtown Springdale is the focus of a half-day summit in that city tomorrow. The second annual Invest Springdale Summit is scheduled to include four major project announcements, including details from Rope Swing Group about future downtown plans. Jill Dabbs, executive director of Downtown Springdale Alliance, says renderings for the future of Luther George Park will be unveiled tomorrow
by Wes Michaels from S&M, and he will do a presentation on that and explain and describe how they came to, you know, the input that the community gave and how they really used the arts to lead that discussion and lead the framework about how that redesign of that park was determined.
The Invest Springdale Summit is tomorrow from 12:30 to 4:30 and continues afterward with tours of Emma Avenue venues. Also included on the itinerary are discussions about angel investments in small businesses, how opportunity zones operate, and how public and private investments can work together. More information about tomorrow's summit can be found at springdale.com. Still ahead on today's Ozarks, Les Mis is back on stage at Walton Arts Center.
It's a very honorable responsibility. We love to tell this story every night, and it's a show that I think musical theater fans across the country know and recognize.
Mary Kate Moore explains how she and her fellow castmates and the entire crew create personal connections with the audience while spectacle happens on stage. Her visit in under 10 minutes on today's Ozarks at Large. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Artisphere Festival Orchestra Wednesday, June 26th at 7 p.m. Now in its ninth year, the 2019 Artisphere Festival Orchestra features musicians from major symphonies, ensembles, and distinguished music programs from around the world. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. This year, Arkansas celebrates its 200th birthday. In the spring of 1819, it stopped being part of the lower half of Missouri and became its own territory. But Fort Smith existed even before then. An exhibit in the Capitol Rotunda in Little Rock celebrates the establishment of the fort in 1817. It's titled Arkansas's Western Post, and it's on view through August. The Fort Smith Museum of History, which itself has been in operation for more than 100 years, curated the images and artifacts. Executive Director Lisa Gremlich says the new exhibit puts the city's rich history in front of a wider audience.
I think sometimes Fort Smith gets a little forgotten, and we were here very early, 1817, over 200 years ago now. And sometimes I think people are a little unaware that we have this rich history that's an amazing stories and people who brought it all together.
Lisa Gramlich says the display features some of those stories and people. It starts with the arrival of Fort Smith's first soldiers.
We have portraits of General Benjamin Bonneville and Mrs. Bonneville, which are two of treasures that we like to offer. We have a reproduction of the uniform worn by the United States Rifle Regiment, the first soldiers to settle the fort, which is kind of interesting. It surprised me. It's like a green frock coat with gold trim, worn with white muslin pants and shirt.
Gramlich says they've also included uncut garnets that General Bonneville brought back to Fort Smith from his expedition to the Rocky Mountains.
We have a chair that was made here in Fort Smith and was made special for the World's Fair in Chicago. So that, and it's still in our collection. So it was seen by millions of visitors in Chicago at the World's Fair, and it's in Little Rock right now. So that's one of my favorite artifacts.
And Lisa Gramlich says the exhibit traces Fort Smith's history through the 1960s and 70s.
On more present day, we have a leather racing suit that belonged to Robert Winters, our local motorcycle racing legend, who was nationally known in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So we have a photograph in a leather racing suit that he wore, which is pretty pretty cool thing.
Also happening in the 1960s and 70s, a Poto High School graduate and her husband were running one of the first blacklight poster businesses in the country after starting the company in New York City. Gramlich says some of their original posters will now be on display at the Fort Smith Museum of History.
The exhibit will be featured in a full blacklight environment. We are covering all the windows to keep the light out. So as you walk in, it will be a dark room with black lights and beautiful, vibrant colors and these amazing posters.
That exhibit starts tomorrow, and Roberta Bell will present a program on her and her husband's business at 6 p.m. to kick off the opening. You can also hear her story on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7. The National Park Service is designating the Buffalo National River as an International Dark Sky Park, the 26th national park to receive this designation, the first in Arkansas. Cassandra Johansson, a park interpreter at Buffalo Point, says visitors can experience some of the darkest skies in the state.
So it's quite beautiful down at the river. First of all, if you're close enough to be to the river, you know, like on a gravel bar, you've got the, you know, the background noise of the river, which is beautiful, and of course frogs and the nighttime wildlife. But the really spectacular thing is if you look up, you have a very good chance of seeing the Milky Way, which is pretty spectacular because I realize a lot of folks nowadays don't get to see that from their own backyards. You definitely need a very dark night sky to see that. In addition to the Milky Way, on any given night, on a clear night anyway, you can see about 2,000 stars roughly. So that's quite spectacular too. And normally the Big Dipper really pops out at folks. And depending on what season we're in, if we're in the winter, Orion is very evident and very bright. If we're in the summertime, a lot of times you can see Cygnus and the Swan, which looks like it's kind of flying through the Milky Way or down the Milky Way. So that's kind of a spectacular sight as well.
The dark sky designation was made by the nonprofit International Dark Sky Association, which works with governments, communities, and city planners to reduce light pollution. To that end, Buffalo National River Park staff and volunteers in 2016 conducted an audit about replacing all polluting light fixtures in the park.
The new fixtures that we've been putting in, they point the light directly downward, which is really important. You know, we're really trying hard to put the right amount of light where we need it, when we need it. We've also put a number of our lights on motion sensors, specifically on the interior of restroom facilities. And so that helps in terms of saving energy and, you know, reducing the amount of light that filters out through windows in the evening. And we also have dimmed down our lights as far as wattage goes. We've installed a lot of LED amber-colored bulbs in the fixtures. Amber light is it's a warm light, and so it's not the bright white or the blue light that oftentimes attracts insects and also can be pretty detrimental to a person's night vision. And so, again, we've really kind of warmed the lights, which has helped in terms of light pollution.
The park collaborated with the Arkansas Natural Sky Association, as well as astronomical societies from across the state, to achieve the dark sky status, promoted with a new slogan, "Come for the river, stay for the stars." On June 29th, the park will host a star party at Tyler Bend Pavilion from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m., featuring an educational astronomy program and an opportunity for all visitors to observe the night sky through binoculars and telescopes. Park staff will also host weekly night sky programs this summer at Buffalo Point. The public can call Buffalo Point Ranger Station at 870-449-4311, or you can go online to nps.gov/buff for more information.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. John Mercer Langston was born the youngest of four in Louisa County, Virginia in 1829. Born free to an emancipated mother, Lucy Langston of African ancestry, and his slave owner father named Ralph Quarles, Mercer was a part of a unique experience of Black identity in America at the time. Sadly, both parents died in 1834 of unrelated illness, requiring Langston and his siblings to move to Missouri with a family friend. John Mercer Langston started his academic career in the preparatory department of Oberlin College in 1849. Langston would be the fifth African-American graduate from Oberlin. In 1854, Langston married Carolyn Matilda Wall. And similar to Langston, Wall graduated from Oberlin in 1856. In 1855, John Mercer Langston was elected town clerk, becoming the first Black official in the state. In addition to a law practice and activities as a town clerk, Langston also participated in the Underground Railroad, a system of networks that helped enslaved persons escape to freedom. With his work, Langston caught the attention of abolitionist Frederick Douglass. Both men actively recruited Black volunteers for service in the Massachusetts 54th Infantry Regiment, the first African-American military unit. In 1872, Langston became acting president of Howard University. In 1877, President Rutherford B. Hayes appointed Langston minister to Haiti. And in 1885, Langston became president of Virginia Normal and Collegiate Institute, today known as Virginia State University. John Mercer Langston would run for Congress and win, continuing a legacy of service until his death on November 15, 1897, in Washington, D.C. Today we honor the legacy and life of the legendary John Mercer Langston.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF 91.3 FM in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more about the series at KUAF.com/reflections.
This is Ozarks at Large. Les Mis is back at Walton Arts Center. The nationally touring production is bridging the last days of spring and the first few days of summer this week with performances through Sunday afternoon. Mary-Kate Moore is Fatine in the musical. She's in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News studio with me. Mary-Kate, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
What is it like being in Les Mis? Because this is an epic musical that just about takes in everything that is important in life, right? Desire and security and love.
Yeah, we cover a lot of subject matter, that is for sure. It's a very honorable responsibility. We love to tell this story every night, and it's a show that I think musical theater fans across the country know and recognize. So with that comes a lot of duty to the subject matter and to the songs that were written by Alain Boubil and Claude Michael Schoenberg. And so we don't take it lightly, that's for sure, but we have our own version of the production for sure. So audiences will come and hear the music that they know and recognize. They'll see the characters that they love. But we put our own personal spin on it, so it feels very unique to the group of people that are doing it over there at the Walton Arts Center. So, yeah.
There's such a challenge because there is the personal, but there's the spectacle.
Yes.
I mean, this is big.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very iconic music that we all get to sing every night. But what I really loved about our rehearsal process and about now just the process of performing the show across the country is that our creative team was driven from a story perspective as opposed to a spectacle perspective. The spectacle kind of takes care of itself, really, with the orchestra and the lights and the big, huge, you know, group numbers, the things that everyone knows and loves. But we were told to be real people. We were encouraged to be real people on stage, living real life experiences that change the trajectory of our character's story from the beginning to the end. So because of that, I think the personal actually shines a little bit stronger than the spectacle does, which is very cool for all of us as actors.
And the Victor Hugo novel.
Yes.
I mean, it's about people.
It is.
About the personal, yeah.
It is. And it came in very handy when we were all getting ready to play these roles. You know, he's an incredibly descriptive author, so we have a wealth of material from which to draw from and to shape the characters that we've created over the last year and a half. Yeah.
You mentioned it's an honor to tell this story. I imagine you feel then it's an honor to sing
The song.
You know, and that just takes your vocal cords, luckily, are a muscle, just like every other muscle in your body. So we have a lot of very disciplined singer actors who take really good care of themselves and then sing the heck out of their songs, which is, it's pretty fun. It's fun to hear it every night.
Do you have a regimen as you're on the road to make sure you're well rested?
Yes. Yeah. It can be difficult to attain that, I think, when you're in a new city almost every single week. But it is vital to have a routine every day. So for a lot of people, that's finding a good gym to work out. For a lot of people, that's finding a good health store or like a juice bar or things to keep yourself healthy. And then we all have very solid warm-up routines. So that helps as well. Yeah.
What happens, say I'm at Walton Arts Center an hour before the performance.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Well, there's not a whole lot of dancing in this show,
right,
but there is a lot of stage combat and fight choreography. So every other day we'll have something called a fight call where we walk our way through all of the stage fights that we do just to make sure that everything is safe and everyone is good to go. No one's injured. And then at about half hour is when we start to get into our costumes and our microphones. Everyone's warming up. And then, you know, 5 minutes before, we're all ready to go. We're ready to walk out there and do the show.
Fight call sounds like dancing. It sounds like you've got to have the same muscle memory
it
to
is,
know where you're stepping.
Yeah, it's choreography in a way. Not quite the same as doing like double pirouettes and leaps across the stage, but it does become very dance-like between you and whoever is fighting in the scene with you. So yeah, it definitely is very dance-like. It's about getting the choreography correct.
What's the challenge for an actor like you who has to move a lot and be singing? Because it's one thing to do a nightclub where you sing, or one thing to do acting, but you're doing both.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I think that the physical sometimes helps the vocal because for me, having energy in my body is much more helpful as far as getting big notes out and sustaining my breath. And it really does come down to the fact that we do the show 8 times a week, and we've done it 8 times a week since September 2017. So at this point, it is as much in our bodies as it is in our voices, which is nice.
You're having a good time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We love it. I mean, how could you not? It's such a beautiful show to do, and it's a great group of people to do it with. So
I had someone ask me, actually, how do you feel at the end of Les Mis if you're in the audience?
Hopefully you feel uplifted, you know. There definitely has been a lot of tragedy over the last couple of hours, but there is still that kind of glimmer of hope, especially at the very last song of the show is called The Epilogue, and almost every single character comes back out on the stage, and we sing a sort of plaintive melody to the audience about looking at the world a little bit differently than you did when you came into the theater. So hopefully it's that message that people are leaving the house with.
And what do you leave with?
You know, normally just gratitude, just really, really happy to have been able to share the show with people. It's very fun to meet members of the audience and fans at the stage door just to talk a little bit about their experience. And we're very proud of the production that we have. So, yeah.
Mary Kate Moore is Fatine in the national touring production of Les Miserables on stage at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville through Sunday afternoon. You can find out more at waltonartscenter.org. Hey, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
The Delta Dental of Arkansas Foundation is Arkansas's nonprofit dental health plan. With more than 30 years of experience, Delta Dental offers specialized dental coverage for employees and family members of Arkansas businesses, nonprofits, and governmental organizations with a mission to improve health and to be the leading force in the delivery of quality dental insurance services. More information at ArkansasMissionOfMercy.org. 91.3 is supported by Dog Party USA, offering supervised boarding and daycare in an off-leash environment for dogs of all sizes. Obedience training, professional grooming, and gift certificates are available. DogPartyUSA.com for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm inside the Harold and Blanchcock studio with Timothy Dennis. Timothy, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Very good. Wednesday is when, almost always on Wednesday, I ask you to tell us about live music coming up. Before I ask you to do that, again this Wednesday, I'll let you know that in just about 9 minutes or so, we're going to hear from Jonathan Kreisberg, the premier guitarist whose only visit to the central United States this year, and one of his few visits to the United States, will be Saturday night at Sunrise Stage, part of the 2019 KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. conversation between Jonathan Kreisberg and Robert Ginsberg coming up. But first, Timothy, what other music?
Okay, so let's start with tonight, actually.
Okay.
It's Jazz Night in Fayetteville. I love saying that, actually. But it is. It's Jazz Night at West & Watson. They do it just about every Wednesday night. It's free, starts at 8 p.m., goes till about 11, and it's just a bunch of local jazz musicians just playing it.
Okay.
You know, it's really good. And according to their page, they've got two more dates scheduled so far, so if you want to check it out, go and check it out this week.
If you want to support live jazz in your town, if your town is Fayetteville.
Exactly. Go check it out. Again, that starts at 8 p.m. It's at West & Watson tonight in Fayetteville. Moving on to tomorrow night, Georgia's Majestic Lounge is going to have the next On the Map show, featuring a bunch of post-punk and dark wave bands. White Mansion from the Fayetteville area. I wanna be sacred and profane. Turn off the lights, it's all the same. I want you to feel me. All my emotions and my pain. And you don't need. Also on the bill is The Secret Post, they're from Tulsa, and Kudzu from Springfield. They're all kind of that dark synth pop type sound.
Okay.
Tickets for that show are $8. It should get underway at about 8:30 tomorrow night. Again, that's at George's in Fayetteville. Also happening tomorrow night, Willie Carlisle is going to be a busy guy tomorrow night. He's got two shows booked. The first one is at the Artist Retreat Center in Bella Vista.
Which is, I have never been there, but I am told it is something like a listening room.
That's what I understand.
Okay.
Tickets for that show are $10. It gets underway at 7 p.m. Again, that is the Artist Retreat Center in Bella Vista. Then, down in Fayetteville, Thursday night, Backspace is not only going to have Willie Carlisle, but also Nick Shoulders and the OK Crawdad.
So, Willie Carlisle, one night, two shows, two counties.
Exactly. That show starts at 9 p.m., has a $5 cover at the door. Moving on to Friday night, band by the name of Toto Jojo will be at Smoke and Barrel Tavern. That's fun to say.
Yeah, it is. Toto Jojo.
They are a genre-bending funk and jam music band from Joplin. They're back after a few years on hiatus.
All right.
That show at Smoke and Barrel gets underway at 10 o'clock Friday night. Then, also happening Friday night up the road in Springdale, State House Electric will be at Black Apple Crossing. They're a fantastic local kind of old-time folk duo.
After everything gets settled, living on the moon ain't all that bad. You still get phone calls from your mother. Still get hard looks from your dad.
A lot of double guitars, some banjos thrown in there for good measure.
All right.
Also on that bill is the one and only Willie Carlisle. He is tearing up the road this weekend.
All right. That's three shows
three shows in two days.
All right. Good job, Willie.
That show at Black Apple Crossing gets underway at 8 o'clock Saturday night. And State House Electric, they'll also be at the Nines in Bentonville Saturday night at 9 p.m.
So they're doing a two-show.
They are.
Okay.
Happening over in Eureka Springs Friday night, a band by the name of Snaps for Sinners will be at Chelsea's.
All right.
They are from Santa Rosa, California, and they're kind of Western swing influenced by jazz, folk punk, country, and more.
As I open my eyes, I can't recall what I was dreaming about, or if I was even when they're closed, my eyes don't stop moving. What are they looking for?
Okay. This sounds quite interesting.
It does sound really, really interesting.
Friday night?
Friday night, Chelsea's in Eureka Springs gets underway at 9 p.m. Still Friday night, but down in Fort Smith, Freeverse will be at Harry's Downtown. They are a little rock-based jam and psychedelic funk rock band. That show at Harry's Downtown gets underway at 9 o'clock Friday night. Now moving on to Saturday night, Big Still River will be at Kingfish. They are a string music band think like, modern bluegrass.
Right. Stand up bass, that sort of thing.
Yeah, stand up bass, mandolin, guitar, sure. Banjo, you know, that sort of spiel.
Look straight square into his eyes, just feeding him the word of last bad lies. Tell you once and to tell you two times to help you see what's on his mind. Knows what it's like to love and lose. You'll find him out there singing. He'll be singing those church step blues.
That show at Kingfish Saturday night starts at 8 o'clock. Moving on Saturday night, Terranova Kings will be at Bike Rack Brewing Company in Bentonville, live on the patio. A fantastic local rock trio. I'm guessing they will be electric at being outdoors and everything.
As long as it's not raining.
As long as it's not raining. I don't think anybody will be outdoors if it's raining.
Okay, very good.
That show at Bike Rack Brewing Company gets underway at 7 o'clock Saturday night. Still Saturday, but over in Eureka Springs, it'll be the 90th anniversary of the Wanderoo Lodge.
Right, it's been the Joy Motel. And,
right.
Right, exactly.
So they're having a celebration that's going to feature Brian Martin from right. Sad Daddy, the 96 Miles Band, and Becky Adams.
I'll be the one that keeps you smiling when the night ends, and you'll be the one that keeps me standing like my book ends.
Everything gets underway at 4 o'clock. It's set to go into the evening.
So this will be at the Gravel Bar.
It'll be at the Gravel Bar. Again, everything's set to get underway at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, again at the Gravel Bar, Wanderoo Lodge in Eureka Springs. Moving on to Sunday, there's going to be something interesting happening at Backwood Rags. It's a musician's yard sale. There are going to be instruments and other ephemera there, but it's also going to have live music and food provided by Noah Richmond and Dana Louise. They're dubbing it as Brisket Richmond and his pulled porkestra. So there's going to be a barbecue. There's going to be live music. There's going to be a yard sale. They're inviting musicians to come bring instruments and jam after the set. So everything gets underway at 1 o'clock Sunday, and that's at Backwood Rags on Prairie Street in Fayetteville. The next concert in the Mountain Street Stage Series at Fayetteville Public Library will feature Jenna and the Soul Shakers.
Okay.
Fantastic, fun, kind of New Orleans soul-influenced band.
These are tough choices.
I know. There's a lot of good stuff happening this weekend. Mountain Street Stage Series is always free admission.
Yep.
Gets underway at 2 o'clock Sunday. Now, finally, kind of the biggest surprise of the weekend, really, for me anyway, L.A. Guns will be at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville.
The L.A. Guns?
The L.A. Guns, with not their late 80s, early 90s lineup featuring Tracy Guns and Phil Lewis.
Not with them?
No, with them.
With them?
With
okay.
them.
All right.
Like, the actual lineup.
All right.
Tickets for that show are $22 in advance, $25 day of. And if you don't know who L.A. Guns are, they kind of helped form Guns N' Roses, but then they went off and did their own thing
right.
afterward. Again, that is Sunday at Meteor Guitar Gallery. Starts at about 8 o'clock Sunday night.
And don't forget, just ahead, Jonathan Kreisberg with Robert Ginsberg. We'll hear more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
And more music for the weekend. Jonathan Kreisberg returns to Northwest Arkansas Saturday for a concert at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville, the second show in the 2019 KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. If you want to see him play this year, this is easily your best chance. The rest of Jonathan Kreisberg's tour includes gigs at the Saratoga Jazz Festival, then dates in Italy, Denmark, Finland, Poland, Estonia, and the UK. Kreisberg is coming back here after appearing at Walton Arts Center with Dr. Lonnie Smith a few years ago. This month, Robert Ginsberg, host of Shades of Jazz every Friday night at 10 on 91.3, reached Kreisberg and asked him about his long relationship with music.
As far as playing and music, you began as a preteen. I'm kind of curious, what were the musical doors that opened up that drew you in as a child?
Yeah, my father had a great record collection and he loved listening to music, even though he wasn't a musician himself. You know, there was around the house was hearing Coltrane. I was hearing Hendrix. I was hearing the Beatles. I was hearing John Williams playing the Aranjuez Concerto. I was hearing Ray Charles and Betty Carter, that record a lot, you know, Cream, you know, all kind of very different. The Who, he had really a kind of esoteric taste. So I kind of grew up thinking about music that way, I guess, which is probably explains something about some of my musical choices. Also, I had some incredible opportunity to, there was chorus and playing certain instruments, and I remember I got selected for some honors chorus thing, you know, I guess just people that had a certain aptitude. We ended up some kind of a countywide group where we ended up doing even some things by Bach and Aaron Copland and stuff, and you know, so I was probably 11 or 12 or something like that, you know, and they actually recorded it, and that experience probably had a lot of influence on me, you know, because I mean, pretty soon after that, I started playing Bach and studying classical music and just being a part of something bigger than just myself, singing those tunes and being involved with deeper music must have had some influence on me. I thought about that recently, actually.
This speaks so much to a very topical issue about arts and music education in the schools.
That's
today.
Kind of why I bring it up, too. Yeah, I agree. And that's what I think I started thinking about that.
Your talents were obviously recognized because after you graduated high school, you were awarded a scholarship to attend the University of Miami. We hear about how this music, improvisational music and jazz, is really best learned on the bandstand. But as we know now, that's half of the formula. I'm curious in regards to your take on that. How do you see the balance of formal and practical education working together?
Oh, that's a great question. Those on the bandstand experiences don't necessarily exist in the same way that they did for me even now. Pretty early on, there was a place I was studying, you know, taking private lessons, and there was a guy that worked there, that taught there, that kind of recognized something in me, and he called me for some gigs. They were technically like my first gigs. I must have been like 13 or 14 or something like that. And what he did was he would play this organ with these like little drum machine thing. But basically, so he would start playing and he wouldn't tell me anything. And I would have to just kind of use my ears to figure out what was happening, be in the moment, you know. Of course, that went on to real jazz gigs and the same thing happening where you just get on stage, you don't even know what you're gonna play and you have to use your ears and you have to react and be in the moment. I was already kind of trained for that through doing these cheesy little gigs when I was like 13 or 14 or whatever, you know. I can say that you learn more in a minute of that than you do in hours at a school. And I do believe that. I'm a little old school in that way. You know, I think that using your ears and finding your own relationship with the music is always going to be really important, you know. Some people play like that 100%. I mean, that's how Lonnie Smith plays, you know. Lonnie, you know, I love that, like, with the Doc, it's like I can say, oh, you know, it's an E flat diminished major 7 chord, and he laughs, you know. He laughs at me, and then of course I play it and he goes, oh, that,
right,
you know,
right.
Because to him it's, oh, this one or that one, that's what they are, you know. There's not, a lot of times there's not even really names for him, you know. It's like it's a certain sound that he associates with a shape, you know. And that's much more instant, actually. Putting a name on something is actually another step, you know?
I have gathered that you don't just enjoy the guitar. I have this sense that you have a real physical and emotional need to play that instrument. And I'm just wondering if my intuition is right, and if so, what has been the role of this instrument in your life?
I'm definitely, I would say, of this kind of ilk that exists. People that love music ended up on the guitar and have a funny relationship with the guitar. I've spent a lot of time trying to make the guitar sound like something that's not associated with what the guitar is normally thought of, if that makes sense. Because I spent so much time studying piano, studying saxophone, and trying to find some ways of overcoming the limitations of the guitar, you know, that, you know, you develop this funny, like almost like love-hate relationship with the instrument, you know. That being said, I've been literally playing my same Gibson 175, I would say on 99% of the gigs, pretty much, for the past, wow, yeah. I want to say at least 20 years, you know, maybe 25 years, you know. The physical connection between me and my instrument is ridiculously strong, so much that if I don't play for a few days, I start to feel a little funny, you know.
I've witnessed a sort of an exodus from the mainstream of jazz by a lot of younger players that want to expand their audience, maybe have additional performance opportunities. There seems to be this reaching out.
You're talking about the kind of the neo-fusion movement,
yeah.
Basically?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, do you see this as a trend or just the ebb and flow of the jazz sensibility in general or wanting a gig?
Great question. Yeah. That's... I actually grew up, like as we talked at the start, playing many, you know, listening to and playing many different types of music. By the time I was 15 or 16, I was studying bebop, but I was also I had already played classical guitar for about 5 years and basically had been probably moving on from that, you know. But I had that background. I was a pretty good rock player, and I worked a lot in Florida. Especially with this kind of progressive rock thing I had, which of course was really because through jazz I got into Alan Holdsworth and I checked out a lot of, you know, what we would call fusion music, I guess. When I see what's happening now, it's funny to me in a way, because what I see is that a lot, especially the guitar players, a lot of the young guys, they don't realize that this has happened before. This whole thing, you know, no one calls it fusion now, like the F word, you know what I mean? they're somehow calling it jazz. But to me, it's funny because some of it's even almost like this smooth jazz. It's just they don't realize, like, smooth jazz, when smooth jazz began, like with, you know, Benson doing his thing and Chuck Mangione and these kind of guys, it actually was pretty cool at the time. You know what I mean? It was like its own thing, and it was a kind of exciting thing. Then it became kind of cheesy, you know? First of all, those guys were great players. I mean, Benson, of course, came up with Lonnie, and Chuck Mangione played with Art Blakey, you know? And then you had people coming along kind of mimicking what they were doing, but they weren't, of course, as sophisticated of musicians, you know? And now it's happening again, but it's kind of, it's hip again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of what it is. It's just better playing, but it's kind of in a way like fusion smooth jazz kind of thing,
right,
you know?
Right.
And of course, yeah, like you said, like it is for whatever reason, people are, you know, going that way. And maybe bookers are even booking more of that stuff in some of the, you know, some of the bigger festivals. So to say that I'm not going to be influenced by what's going on is kind of, it would be a lie. You know, I'm going to be influenced by what's happening around me. For me, it's never going to be an intellectual thing, really. I'm never going to sit down and say, oh, well, that's what's cool now, so I'm going to do that. You know, that's just, that feels dirty to me. My job as an artist is to continually be inspired by the world around me and find a way to express some idea that I feel is unique, and create my own little musical universe. That's always been what I've tried to do.
Jonathan Kreisberg will perform Saturday night at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville. You can learn more at digjazz.com. He spoke with Robert Ginsberg, host of Shades of Jazz, heard every Friday night at 10 on 91.3 KUAF.
Walton Arts Center presents the 10th annual Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, June 10th through the 29th. This year, featuring performances inspired by the wonders of the universe and the beauty of our home planet, including the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, a space-themed film series, and more. Tickets and event lineup at artisphere festival.org. Support for KUAF comes from the Malco Cinemas and Grills, located in Rogers, Springdale, Fort Smith, and the Razorback Cinema Grill and IMAX in Fayetteville. Fan pages available on Facebook. Fans receive direct movie information to the email inbox, on the web at facebook.com/Malco Theater to join.
And contributors to our show today included Jacqueline Froelich, who also provided sound and information about the Buffalo River's designation as a dark sky park, Timothy Dennis, and Susanna Sitek, who provided the sound and information for the Fort Smith exhibit at the State Capitol. Timothy Dennis also mastered the show today, and Timothy also produced today's installment of Reflections in Black. Reflections in Black is written and hosted by Raven Cook, and you can hear new installments almost every Wednesday on Ozarks at Large. Robert Ginsberg produced his conversation with Jonathan Kreisberg, and you can find out more about Saturday night's concert at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville at digjazz.com. By the way, that show is part of the annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. You can see the entire series at either digjazz.com or KUAF.com. And you can hear Robert's show, Shades of Jazz, every Friday night beginning at 10 on 91.3. Our Ozarks at Large theme is titled First Hurrah. It's performed and written by Daryl Sean. Additional content provided for today's show from KUAR, public radio in Little Rock and Central Arkansas. And big thanks to Facilities Management at the University of Arkansas for installing the new, bigger whiteboard used for show planning here at Ozarks at Large. Thank you, guys. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Grove, Oklahoma. KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. If you can't be with us when we're on the air at noon and 7, don't forget, we are a free podcast available through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you find podcasts. And if you'd like to hear an individual story or interview once again and maybe share it with someone you know, you can do that at ozarksatlarge.com. We have links there that are available for you to share through social media or email. And additionally, you can hear more information and news from our region tomorrow morning at 5:30 and 7:30 with Antoinette Grajeda's newscast. She provides those every weekday morning inside Morning Edition. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.